Causing the Effect, a podcast focused on the exploration of your mind, body, and spirit.
Jason Van Ruler, how you doing, brother? What's going on?
I am doing well, man. How are you?
I'm good, dude. It's hot as balls out here in New York. But Jason's coming from South Dakota, licensed therapist. Seems to be the expert on addiction here, masters in addiction. Where did the journey start of wanting to be a therapist? Did you kind of know you wanted to do this from the beginning, or was it?
Yeah, let's see. I did. Yeah, it's funny because a couple of years ago, I found one of my old journals, like a journal as a kid. I like to draw a lot and then write stuff. And so I wrote, like, I want to be a psychologist and live in a brownstone. And I had like this whole life planned out. And then I promptly did everything other than that. Right. So I started out and I was like, I owned a recruiting firm. And so it's just going to be a business guy. But somewhere along the way, like, I got really interested in helping people. And I think selfishly, having gone through some stuff myself, wanted to kind of figure out my own stuff better. And so that led me full circle to kind of what I'd always dreamed of, which was pretty cool.
Yeah. Part of what my firm does is recruiting for ultra high net worth family offices too. So we have that in common. It's like, I moved from finance into people, and now it's like, and yeah, the similar thing, even when I started this podcast, it was like part to help yourself. Now, did you deal with addiction issues in some way?
Yeah. So that was a big part of my family growing up. And so just having grown up around that, I could see the impact. And then also just doing some of the recruiting work. I mean, I recruited from anywhere from entry level all the way up to C-level. And you would see some of that come out, right? You'd see people who really had no stability. And so they needed to kind of keep moving. And so at some point, to me, it just got to be really intriguing to figure out, like, how do I help with the core issue as opposed to just the symptom?
And at what age did you decide I'm gonna go full on for the psychology?
Yeah, so it was shortly after I got married, and I think it was awesome because, you know, my wife met me and I was a business guy, and then, you know, was doing pretty well and successful, and then, you know, shortly after getting married, I'm like, hey, I think, like, I should quit this job and go back to school and be a student. So what do you think about that? Like, what if we just blew all this money I'm making on tuition? Like, how would that be? And I'm being a little tongue in cheek here, but she was like, oh, okay. Like, this is how this is going to work. Fine.
Dude, that's awesome. Cause that's like, that's exactly what I want to do. I'm like, cause I was, my mother said to me, you're either a lawyer, a doctor, or in finance, like, pick one. And I said, I kind of like the psychology stuff. You're going to work at the psychology factory? That's not going to happen. And now that's what I'm thinking about doing again. How is that process being? Because you're married by that point. You're basically, you know, supposed to be stability and going to have the kids and all that stuff. Like, how is that process?
You just do it, man. It was what was really cool about my wife is she just supported me. So that's the thing that was really amazing is she was just like, you know, on paper, this makes no sense. We got it pretty good right now. You want to flip everything upside down, but like, I believe in you, so go do it. And so she supported me. And so I think, like, I work with couples now a lot, and I just say, like, you can do really difficult things and challenging things as a couple as long as you're both pointed in the same direction. And so what was awesome is we were both pointed in the same direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's so interesting with this trauma or addiction that it becomes a generational thing. I feel like, you know, I met my grandfather for the first time, my father's father the first time a couple of years ago. Same exact shit, all crazy. We love Atlantic City. We love gambling. It's all this hype. Like, through your journey, what has been the biggest kind of eye opener about addiction and where it comes from and how interrelated it is to the trauma of, let's say, your parents or just from, you know, things that are kind of come before you?
Yeah, I think what's been interesting to me is no matter who I've worked with or the addiction even that was present, I've always understood like how they got there. Right. That's been very surprising to me is that I don't think I've ever worked with somebody where, like, I couldn't understand why they did what they did. Now, I might have made a different choice. Right. That might not have been a healthy choice that they made. But I've always really connected with, like, there's a pretty legitimate need that underpins addiction and we're just not getting it met. And so for whatever reason, it turns into addiction or it points itself in that direction. But that need fundamentally is actually like a pretty reasonable need. And so that was helpful for me. Because I think for a long time, like, I couldn't understand how people got where they got. I couldn't understand why I'd been treated the way I had. And it didn't justify it, but it allowed me to kind of empathize and say, like, oh, that makes sense. I mean, again, maybe not something I would have done, but I understand how you got there.
So this addiction's trying to fill a need. I'm assuming that need could be pretty broad or something you're missing. I think trying to do a little bit of Carl Jung subconscious work for myself, it seems self-worth is what I would guess. Is that something that pops up with people? And I'm just, you know, just kind of spitballing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we all sort of have, I'll say to clients, like we have these questions kind of tattooed on our hearts. Right. And so we spend our life trying to kind of get those answered. And so I think one of those might be like, am I worthy or am I lovable or things like that. And so we don't know that inherently because of maybe our childhood or experiences we've had. Then sometimes, you know, that addiction really answers that question for us.
Yeah. And for me, it's always, I was telling Jason, earlier, it's never like one thing that I've been like, I'm addicted to it, but it's just the name it. And I've been attached to it for a little bit. And then you get a little too.
You're like an equal opportunity person. I appreciate that about you.
Yeah. I mean, fuck it. Yeah. I mean, even during COVID, I was getting addicted to COVID was so amazing. Cause I really delved into my meditation. It was fine, but I saw myself with like the inhaler stuff. Like I had a nose thing and I was doing it for a month. I'm like, what the hell am I doing? I got to get rid of this. Like that feeling that, is it just, you're missing something and you're just trying to get this filled, but it's almost like this, cause I'll be honest with you, this year it's been gambling. They legalized gambling in New York. And that's like the one thing that kind of drove my father up the wall. And it like, I had that issue in my 20s, and then you end up, it's shutting it down. It's like, oh, I'm good, I'm money. And then all of a sudden it just creeps up. Is the process of when you're addicted, like there's really no letting the guard down, so to say. It's almost like you just have to be watching at the door closely forever.
Well, I mean, you have to know what that need is and how it's going to come out, right? Because the thing is we have these established ways of meeting needs. And so if they're unhealthy and we learn those at a young age, they just kind of continue to go down that path. And even from a brain perspective, it's just easier to go down that path because it's what you've done before. And so you have to be kind of on guard to, hey, if I know like when I'm feeling unloved or unworthy or I'm feeling alone, it's going to come out sideways in gambling addiction, like then we got to watch out for that, right? Like, how do I meet that need in a healthy way? Because if I don't, it'll come out somewhere else. And if we're not careful, it's like whack-a-mole a little bit.
Yeah. And are you of the, because what I did, I guess even the last couple of years, is almost like, okay, let's just be obsessed with good things, the gym, even meditation, spirit of the podcast, like stuff that doesn't really hurt you. Are you a person who says things like that, or that it's okay to be obsessed with the good stuff because that's a hustle and bustle? Or do you take the approach of like, listen, everything kind of needs balance, more of a centering way of doing it?
Yeah, I mean, I think initially when someone's trying to get out of active addiction, we do need to replace a behavior with something. And so that might even be, you know, a healthier, if you will, addiction, like going to the gym or doing stuff like that. But ultimately, I think if we want sustainable recovery, we have to get out of that cycle of having to do stuff all the time or having to be addicted to something. And we need to get better at just kind of being balanced and just being in a state of being okay. Now, that's easier said than done. So that takes a while. But eventually, if we want sustainable recovery, we have to get to that spot.
So a lot of this really has to deal with attachment to something, at least.
Right. Yep.
Now, to talk to me about Solomon recovery and where that started. And I know you believe it started 2013, and I could be totally making this up, but I've been reading the Old Testament, the New Testament stuff. Is Solomon, is peace have something to do with the Solomon recovery?
No way. No way. Not at all. Good guess, my friend. Yeah, you're on the right track. Okay. So the deal is, how do we kind of meet people in that space where peace is present? And so that's kind of been my goal is to just build a place that meets people where they're at. And so I'm talking, you know, from my office, and my office looks like a house. It's a business, but it looks like a house. And that's on purpose, because I want people to feel like they have a home and that they can come here and just be free to be themselves. Because what I find a lot is that increasingly people have not had that.
Yeah. And I've been speaking to a couple of the therapists come on the show, and it's just interesting to me. I've dabbled. I think I went once when I was in 23, 24, but I guess there is sort of a wall that people put up regardless of even if it's an open space, or you say it's an open space. Is that something you felt it's hard to kind of pull out of some people? There's sort of wall you have to pull down. I guess when you're figuring out people's kind of deepest, darkest situations here, I guess that is part of it to do, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, and I'll say quite often, like I have to earn people's trust, and that's fair. That's okay. Right. So if we're going to have some of these conversations that you maybe have never had before with somebody, Like, I got to earn my spot at the table. You shouldn't just give that to me. And so my goal is to meet people consistently so they feel that way.
And what would, if we could at a high level, walk through the process of the addiction and getting somebody kind of to this place of recovery, how would you, what would the process look like?
Yeah, I think there just has to be a willingness first and foremost, right? So the person has to be willing to do something about it. And then I think the second really key thing is they have to be honest. With addiction, you know, we have this typical pattern where we practice some thinking errors, right? We justify or minimize or do all these different things to basically get around the truth about what's actually happening. And so what I try to do with people is to just meet them in what's true, for better or for worse, right? Because there will be some things that are amazingly positive about them. And there'll also be some stuff that isn't. And so we try to just start with the truth and work from there.
And for you, how hard was that process just from a personal standpoint of getting to this place of recovery? And then, you know, how did that affect the family aspect of it? Because that's kind of the big reason I would say I'm trying to break this cycle, because I don't want to, you know, keep this multi-generational situation happening.
Yeah, well, I think you have to do it for yourself, right? I mean, I think sometimes we do this with the hope of changing somebody else. And while that sounds like a very kind thing to do, it's just not how it works usually. And so I would just say, like, you know, for me, I think I started doing my own work because I wanted everybody else to change, right? I thought, well, if I do this, maybe this will be the catalyst to everything else changing. And it didn't. And so I think I went through a season of being kind of ticked off about that. You know, like, hey, I'm doing all this work and you're not changing. And like, what's the deal? And somewhere along the way, like, I just realized that was never the point. Right. So the point was, I can control my stuff and I can't control others' stuff. And the point was to acknowledge that. And I think once I did that, it really empowered me to do my own work, because then, like, I owned it. Whereas before, I think I was more kind of one foot in, one foot out, because again, I was hoping for something that wasn't realistic.
That's interesting. And with this, you know, we mentioned self-worth, and I guess there, with addiction, there does seem to be some sort of, I don't know if I would call it external validation, but just something that you're trying to do for the outside world that you're trying to prove something or try, like, for me, that's been the thing. Like, I lived that life of, I wanted to, like, prove everybody I'm normal in my 20s. So I got married, built, you know, became a millionaire, built this house. And I was like, oh shit, I'm living off of, like, other people's experience. I did all this and it wasn't even for myself. Is that something that is a common theme or thread in your clients?
Yeah. Well, I think it's a thread for everybody, right? I mean, I think we all fall into that, even just being on Instagram a lot. I mean, I see there's no shortage of people to tell you how you should be. Right. And so, you know, at some points I'm one of them, right? I'm telling you how to do this or how to do that. So I think if we're not careful, we turn the volume up on other people's voices and we turn the volume down on our own. And so what can happen is that we can live a whole life that way. And then when it's towards the end, we realize, like, this might not have actually been me, or I can't quite figure out which part was me and which part wasn't. And that's challenging. And I think now more so than ever, just because there are so many voices and we're so connected via technology, like, that's always ongoing. And so you have to be really careful with what you listen to.
Yeah. And I feel like people, at least the younger generations, they're more open to kind of change, like how you did. I'm doing recruiting, I'm in business, I'm going to switch. And when you keep doing that, that's a good thing because you're experimenting. But I also feel like you're saying it does get, confusing in a way of like, who am I? And that was something I always asked myself. And that's an answer, you know, this question you'll never get an answer to. And I think the integration of your soul, as Carl Jung would say, that has been such a, he's been such an impactful psychologist for me, trying to not only look at the good things, the good sides of yourself, the stuff you like, but like really taking a hard look at the truth, as you know, that's what hit me when you were kind of, you know, you mentioned this earlier, like finding the truth of where the darkness lies. That process, that shadow work, is that something that's influenced you? And has Carl Jung been a proponent of yours?
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about like the shadow self. I have the Big Red Book. I have
there
all
you
that
go.
Stuff.
There you go.
Yeah. Big fan. I mean, it is, I think, really impactful in the work I do because it's a way of looking at it that makes sense to me. You know, there's all these different pioneers in our field, but some of them just make more sense to me than others. And to me, helping people is always about existential issues, right? It's about the things that we lay awake fearful of at night. And it just comes out in different ways. And so my goal is always to help people with the ways that it comes out, but also to dig underneath that and say, like, what is that real issue? Right. The real issue is like, do I know who I am? Am I a good person? You know, is life meaningful? Like, we get down to those things. And when we deal with those, change occurs.
And I guess you need to, because those are questions that, it's funny, I'm putting together the addiction with those thoughts, those things I can think about all day. And I feel like even that you can get a little too wrapped up in it, because I'm like annoyed by the people just walking through life not worrying about this. I'm like, shit, I wish I was just not thinking on that level. But I guess the power of that obsessiveness is like a detriment in a way.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm with you in the sense that having insight is not always the gift that we make it out to be. Right. So having, you know, this kind of awareness of like, oh, I do that, I shouldn't do that, or this is unhealthy. Like, that is actually not helpful if not paired with action. Right. So my big thing is like, insight without action is a waste, because it just makes us depressed. Right. If you've ever known you should do something but not done it, that doesn't make you feel very good. And so to your point, sometimes I think we walk around and we say, like, wouldn't it be great if our life, if we didn't have all this time to have insight, right? But if we do, then that's kind of an obligation for us to do something with it. And if we don't, it's often going to lead us to feel kind of sad and depressed.
Now, with coming back to your clients, is there usually I know we all have trauma in some way, but how much is trauma playing a role in addiction?
Yeah, I think hugely. I mean, and so oftentimes, you know, when we have addiction, there is some type of trauma, and there's different types of trauma in the sense that some would be major. There are things like, you know, war or death or serious, like there's some things that are very significant, and there's other things that are just repetitive and small, but are trauma nonetheless. And so I think there's a lot of that. I think right now trauma is kind of like this hot button word, right? We just kind of throw that out and this, trauma that. And so I think we have to be a little careful, but at the same time, it is something that's happening quite a bit. And it does play a significant role in addiction, because that's often the catalyst for us trying to cope with those feelings.
Yeah. And that's been a question I've always had, is like, you know, there's this living, there's three different sets, right? There's the trauma, which is more looking for the past. Then there's the Eckhart Tolle mindfulness, Zen, let's stay in the present. And then there's the, you know, you have to always barter with your future. That's Jordan Peterson. And then you have to always look forward. And I think the answer is you have to kind of be able to play those three different things at all time. You know, how would you comment on that? And how has that process been for you, especially when you're doing it with other people? Because you have to not only be able to do it yourself, but, you know, do it with others.
Right. Yeah. So I think early on in my career, I probably looked at it more in the standpoint of like going forward. Right. So tell me about tomorrow. Tell me about problems today. But at the same time, the more I've worked, we are the result of our childhoods. I mean, I know people don't always like to hear that, but it has a profound impact on who we are as people, because I have a good friend that says we're always reacting to or reflecting our childhoods. And I agree. And so I think sometimes it's unpopular because people say, well, I left that behind. But what's true is that is really the first teacher that we have about how life works, how relationships look, what we're supposed to do in life, how things are supposed to go. And so if we don't kind of spend some time understanding that, we're very likely to repeat it.
Yes. I've had a bunch of psychologists on the last month, and I was one of those. Like, oh, my trauma is not, these relationships with your parents, it doesn't affect you that much. And then, you know, that age, what, 1 to 4, 1 to 5, it's where you basically are creating your vision of relationships for the rest of your life. And I was like, oh boy, I got to do some work on that. So now my question to you is, how do you think, what do you think the best way to go about that work is? I think, you know, therapy is a big tool of that, but is this something that pops, I would think it pops up quite often with when you're dealing with people, because all these addictions are coming from probably previous relationships or just how they were brought up.
Yeah. I mean, I'm biased, right? As a therapist, I'm totally biased about this. So I'm just going to tell you to go to therapy, right? But at the same time, I think the value is there in understanding the patterns that we come from. And so what I'll tell people is we can get down into the details if we want. And sometimes we need to do that to process trauma and move through it. But just at even a more general level with people, I want them to understand the patterns. Okay. This is the style of relationship my parents had, or this is the relationship my grandparents, like, I want them to see that and then see if that's still happening in their life. right? And if it is, then I want them to understand, do they want that or not? Because they get to make a decision today. So that's how we kind of end that intergenerational relationship style and habits, is like, we figure out, do we still want to replicate this today? And maybe we do, right? Maybe say my parents had an awesome relationship and I had the same one, and that's good, great for me. Or maybe we say I don't want it, but it's up to you to decide.
But even that's a good first step, is really taking a hard look or thinking and going backwards, saying, how was the childhood with my parents, with anybody close to me? And then how, or first, I guess most of the time those would be interconnected, right? The answer would be, yes, it is kind of affecting both. And then being able to say, you know, we have to kind of decondition ourselves in a way.
Yeah. It's like, well, what did I learn from that? Right. So if I say to you, tell me about school, what'd you learn from school? You can tell me some of the things you learned in school. Right. So I want to do that with people, where I say, like, tell me what you learned from your parents. Like, what were those rules you learned? What did they teach you about conflict? What did they teach you about love? And then, are these things that you're trying to seek in your own life? Or do you say, like, that's terrible and I don't want it? Where are you at? And I think the struggle is, for all of us, like, we mostly want to be loyal to our parents. So it feels odd sometimes to say something didn't work or we don't like it, because we want to be loyal children, right? So we want to say, well, everything was great. And so I'm always just telling people, like, the goal here is not to make someone to be terrible or great. It's just to say what's true, right? And so if what's true is, my dad loved my mom, but he cheated a lot and they never talked about it. Okay. Like, we don't, you know, we don't need to call your dad a jerk or anything like that. But if that's what's true, how do we take what we know? And then how do we use that in today's relationships? Well, maybe I need to be on the lookout so I don't do that, right? But we want to take that information and make it into something good.
And what do you think has been the biggest block for people to make change? And I would guess, even I'm talking from a personal experience, more fear. And I'll just leave it at fear. What would you say has been the biggest proponent of people not creating that change?
Yeah. I mean, I think fear is one of them. I think, you know, it's sometimes the devil, you know, right? It's like, it's miserable here, but I don't know what it's going to be like over there. I think sometimes not having permission, people feel like they need permission to do that. We're not believing they're worth it, you know, so we kind of bump up into that sometimes. But the truth is change is hard. We don't change that much as adults. I think we would like to advertise that people change all the time, and it's just not really so. And so if we're going to do it, like, that's a big ask, and it's hard to get there for a lot of people. And so I just kind of, instead of just doubling down and saying you need to do it, I just kind of say, like, well, let's talk about the fact that it makes sense not to change too, right? Mm. It makes sense to stay the same. So which do you want to do? But I think we have to meet people in their humanity, which is that for all of us, we'd rather not change, right? We'd like to just stay the same. That would be easier.
It would. It certainly would be. And now, yeah. When you're, I know you've been public speaking. Do you talk to a certain audience is it couples? Is it addiction people? Or are you just kind of talk to the general public to move into? Because I feel like we should get a mental health checkup every year. Like, all these, like, I don't know why we're so into practical sciences. I get technology great, but like, the mind is the driver of everything. It doesn't make much sense to me.
Okay. I don't disagree. Yeah, I don't disagree, my friend. I think the thing is that there has been a big stigma around that. And just sort of saying, like, I can only do that if I have to get to this certain level, right? I have to hit rock bottom to go do that. And I don't think we've always taken a proactive approach to it, like you just referenced. I think that would be a good idea. You know, I talk to companies and organizations and couples, kind of the whole gamut, but I talk just a lot about, are we being intentional about where we want to end up? Because if we're not, then we're going to probably have a life that's not ours. And if you're okay with that, like, I'm okay with that too, but a lot of people aren't. And so how do we take a couple of minutes just to decide, like, is where I'm headed really where I want to end up?
And I think part of that is, and I'm talking more for the people that are, I guess it would just be like, a lot of us don't even know what we want. Does that make sense? And I guess taking the Perfect. Time to figure yep. it out is like a conundrum. And I've been like, help. I've been, you know, I got this little tidbit from Jordan Peterson, like, just ask. So in my meditations at the end, I'll just kind of ask, like, what do I really want? And, you know, you'd be surprised what pops up. I think a lot of people go, oh, well, that's silly. I can't have that. It's probably the answer most of us think, because it's different, or that would create change.
Yeah, absolutely. I think people struggle with that. However, I do think it's easier to know what we want, but it's harder to know what we need. And so I talk to a lot of people about what do you actually need? So the want, I think, is often controlled by kind of our feelings, right? I feel this way and therefore I want this. But what really drives behavior is what we need. And so I think if we're not careful, we just meet what we want all the time and we miss what we need. And so that's where I'm trying to say, like, hey, let's slow down and actually figure that out. What's hard is, I mean, maybe you can relate to this. I know I can. A lot of people say, I don't know what I need. Like, hey, man, I have no idea what I need. And I go, okay, cool. Most of us don't, right? And so we have to try some things out and refine it, right? So most of us are not just going to be able to verbalize what we need without trying some things and then refining it and getting more efficient and learning from there.
Yes. And I think I completely agree. That's like one of the, I get even more angry when that happens. Like, oh, I wanted this. And then you get it. And it's like, oh, maybe that's not like, why do you think it's so hard to figure out what we need?
I don't think anyone's asked us, right? For the most part, we're
that's
coming such,
that's
out
an
of...
interesting insight, Jason. That's a really, that's, I'm clipping that. That's really that's a good piece. Wow.
Yeah. I just think we've missed it, right? No one's asked us. And so we haven't really had to look out for it. And then if we're not careful, it just drives us, right? And so we're driving in the wrong direction because we're chasing wants instead of needs.
That is heavy stuff. We'll talk about this briefly with me, because it's been like, I got divorced a couple of years ago. I was like, I don't need a woman. I'll just, you know, do whatever. I'm Scott, the great Scott, Jason. I'll do what I want.
You're going to do become, it.
And then I get all these women. You're all hyped up. It's like, I don't think that just doesn't feel right. I'm like, shit. That's so funny you brought up what you need, Jason. This is like what I've been pondering like this week. Do people have like revelations when you say that up? Because that's a good piece right there.
Yeah, because a lot of times when I'm talking to people, they have everything they want or they have a lot of it, right? And so that seemingly is supposed to make everything better, and then they get there and it doesn't. And so the struggle is I got what I need, but I don't know what I want. And so when we really get down to that, what's pretty cool is that people don't actually have a lot of needs, but the needs they have are really important. And so if they're not getting met, they will always settle for what they want. But the trouble is like, I don't want people to settle.
Absolutely. And now when you say needs, is that like a human needs? Is there like a psychological kind of thing here? Like, what would you say some have been the overarching needs for people?
Yeah. So I would say like connection, community, things like that. I think purpose is one that is missed often. Mm-hmm. I think some people have just a need to get back. They have a need to take care of children or raise kids up or teach. I mean, I think there's a whole slew of different needs that people have, but they are more existential in nature, right? They're more of kind of those core things.
Mm-hmm. And then how much would you say of this? We're talking a lot about figuring it out and trying to solve the puzzle here, but how much letting go would you say is involved in this whole process? I feel like that could also be a piece of this, of attachment and I need, I want. How would you comment on that?
Yeah. I mean, I think I smile with that just because it's frustrating for people when I say like, yeah, you know, this is that part where we let that go. And that's hard to do. Right. And so I know that I don't like to let things go, but what's true is that we can't have everything. And I think that's sometimes a thing we need to grieve, because we kind of live in a place that says we should have everything. And if we don't, that's an injustice and we should just get that because we want it. And what's true is like, you can't. And so we can grieve that, but we have to start letting some of this stuff go, because to get what we need, we can't always get what we want, right? It is a trade-off. And so you got to just decide like, which one is it? You know, it can't be both.
Mm-hmm. And so I guess the steps would be really figuring out what you need, which that's not going to come to you. That would be more trial and error. So you have to get rid of the fear, take some action, do all that stuff, get the needs, and then accept. This has been an issue I have. You can't run, make $1 million in your business and have the podcast and have the girlfriend and go to the gym and meditate 2 hours and be with her. It's like, okay, you literally can't. And I guess letting go of that literally everything, because that's what you think everybody, you know, you could have it all. You really can't. There's only 24 hours in the day.
Well, and that's what people tell you, right? Is there's no shortage of people to tell you could have all of that. And I would argue like, maybe you could, like maybe you're the guy, you seem pretty driven to me. So maybe you're the guy that actually could. Is that what you need? I don't know if that's what you need. I don't know, man, that's a lot. That seems overly complicated to me. So why do you think you need all that? So that's kind of where I would just come back to is like, I don't know. Like, that seems like a lot.
Yeah. And that's literally exactly what my mother said to me. She said, how much more do you need? Like, how many boxes do you have to check before I say I'm okay. And that's the self-worth thing. And then we're back to the square here, man. Jason.
And here's what's funny is I went to all this school, right? to do what mothers have been saying for years, right? I mean, I'm always like thwarted by a mother because a mother will just say the thing that I think is so brilliant. You know, I'm like, I paid $80,000 for that. And they're like, oh, I just thought that because I'm a mom. And I'm like, oh, crap. I thought I was brilliant. But it's true, right? It's like we overcomplicate it. And that's okay. And usually that's a great sign because it's a sign of intelligence and creativity and all these things. But we way overcomplicate it. And in the overcomplication, we find a lot of unhappiness.
Yeah. And you could tell me if you agree or disagree with this, but like the perspective for me has been such an important thing. Cause I feel like even this generation, we're so used to, we are in a, you know, some ways we're in a worse spot, but we are lucky to be where we are. And I always find it funny. That's like it's the 30 to 35 year old sort of like high middle-class kids that always have the biggest issues. And it's like, I put myself in there. Cause I'm like, there's always a problem. It's like, you got it pretty good. How much do you think that perspective and gratitude comes into that kind of stuff? How much does that play in all this?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot, if not everything, right? Because I think we all, you know, we all tell ourselves different stories about the same things that happen. And so that perspective really changes our response to it. And our perspective is based on so many different things, you know, how we grew up and health and relationships and all these just different factors. But our perspective really is that lens through which we see the world. And so if that is skewed a certain way, which, hey, just saying all of us have a skew to our perspective, then we see things that support what we already believe, right? And so if I believe, you know, people are out to get me, if that's my perspective, I'm going to look at every situation through the lens of how do I find evidence people are out to get me, right? And then I'm going to say, see, here's a bunch of evidence to support what I already thought, because that's what our brains do to help us out, right? Our brain says, I'm just going to pick up patterns and support what we already think. And so when we change our perspective, we can change our lives. I mean, it's crazy how it changes people's lives.
Jason, that is, you're freaking nailing it on the head. We're on the same wave. Cause that's, I would say I was always brought up that way, right? If we're going back to that, I've done a little bit of this work myself. It's like my mother always told me, she said the smart stuff, but she also said, don't let anybody make a jerk off out of you. And okay. That was the theme of my life. That's what I was looking for. And then, you know, you do a little mindfulness. COVID came and I shut everything down. It's beautiful. And now it's come back and I'm like, shit, I can't tell. And it's just frustrating when you go back and forth from it. Cause it's like you tasted the piece of peace and then you lost it. And I guess this could be just the way life goes. Sometimes it's there. Sometimes it's not.
Yeah. Isn't that the beauty of it though? Is that we have to have it and lose it to want it again. Right. Mm. So the thing is that I think there's all these seasons in our life and we have those. And certainly I've had those. I mean, kind of like you're talking about during COVID, I mean, my meditation was at an all-time high. I was doing yoga every day. Like it was amazing. And then like, I just, and because I felt so good the minute that, you know, we could go back to our lives, I just dropped all of it. Right. I was like, this was so wonderful. You know, the thing I should do is like, just quit doing everything I've done. And just like forego all of it. But I think like, that's also part of being human, right? We're not machines. And so we do it and then we drop it and then we come back and we drop it. And my goal is just always to make the time a little less in between, right? So I just like, maybe it took me 6 months to come back last time. I'm going to come back in 5, but we do that a lot.
That's a very cool part to look at. Yeah. Cause just with the hustle and bustle of Manhattan and New York, like I was like, man, I just liked being here. You know, you wake up 4:30, you meditate, you do the whole. Now, do you still have any morning ritual that you're doing when you wake up? Like, what is Jason doing the second he wakes up?
Yeah, I mean, so I'll do meditation every day. Is really important to me, and then I'll do some journaling just to kind of get my head on straight, know where I'm headed, and do some gratitude stuff. But I wouldn't say it's a lot. I like to work out in the morning when I can. Sometimes I have, you know, work stuff where I'm traveling, so it's not possible. But I like to start the morning just in kind of a contemplative state. And just kind of figure out like, where am I at? What do I need to do? And then what are like my 3 top focuses today? And how do I execute?
So you're setting, that was going to be one of my questions. Like you're setting not like an intent, like I'm going to do, you're more of just having these certain things that you want to feel today in a way.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, if I have, you know, an event or something that I'm kind of thinking through or not quite certain about, I will take time to visualize myself going through that. Right. And so what research tells us is visualization is in a lot of ways equivalent to practice. And so, you know, like last night, I may or may not have visualized myself being on the podcast and doing well and having a good rapport and going back and forth and how that might feel for me to do that. And I'll do that a couple of times. And that way, when I sit down with you today, I go, oh yeah, I've already done this before. Yeah, like this is fine because I've already walked through it. Or I'll visualize myself coming out on stage and talking to the audience and what I might say or how I might feel, just to kind of prep myself for what's about to come.
Mm. Now, you were doing the addiction to first start, and then you moved to couples, or was that always the plan, was to do both?
It's all the above, my friend. Yeah. I mean, it's, I'm a relational guy. So here's what I would tell you. And, you know, maybe this is connecting too many concepts, but, I think we're all in relationships all the time. And one of those relationships can be with an addiction. And so I work all the time with couples who actually have, you know, this third party, which is addiction. Hmm. And so to me, it just all goes together.
And when you say addiction, like addiction to fighting, or is it addiction, like an actual addiction to something, or just
all the above, right? Sure. But we have kind of this third party in the system. And so that third party takes away from the relationship. But I think we are relational creatures. And so we're just out there creating relationships all the time. And one of those relationships could be with addictive behavior.
And what would be one of the tips that you see, where, what would you say to a healthy couple that, you know, maybe is on, like, what is an insight that you've seen that maybe a couple has missed? Like, was there an overarching theme? Because for me, it was always, I just feel like we're talking two different languages. It's always with women. That's always kind of the thing. And I'm, you know, I know I'm a thinker, they're probably emotional, whatever that may be. Is there a certain piece you've seen that's a commonality?
Yeah, I think just understanding the language that each other speaks, and I don't even mean just like a love language, but I mean just kind of how they talk. I mean, I'm talking with you, so I'm from South Dakota, from the Midwest. I remember I did a bunch of training in New York, and I met some people from New York. And, you know, a lot of people in New York talk a little different, right, than we do in South Dakota. A little faster, a little rough sometimes, you know, to say how it is. So I'm talking to these people, and they say some stuff that kind of hurts my feelings. Because they're just very direct and to the point and quick. And so my Midwestern sense is, you know, these people are being mean, right? And so I say, hey, I think you're being mean. And they go, no, actually, we like you. Like, we're just talking how we normally talk, but it's kind of, it's just how it is. Okay, well, I don't know that, right? So they talk like a New Yorker and I talk like a Midwesterner, okay? But the thing is if we don't call attention to that, I'm gonna keep interpreting what they say through the Midwestern lens, and it's offensive to me. Okay. And so it's important for me to say, hey, that's my buddy Scott. That's how Scott talks. That's not a personal thing. That's just how Scott talks. And you can go, hey, the way Jason talks is like, he's got this dry sense of humor and he kind of talks funny and he acts like he knows everybody. And like, that's how he talks. And that's not about me. And I think we miss that in relationships, is understanding that we both speak differently.
That is such a cool analogy for that. Cause that's kind of like, I feel like my issue with all my relationships is I don't really speak up enough, and it's because I want to be loved. And I would say I'm a little oversensitive for the way I'm portrayed in life. And that may be a hurt thing for me, but just bringing it up and just saying, hey, you know, that hurt my feelings in a way, like just being an adult about it instead of like letting it linger and get to that. I think that could be a hard spot for some people, just, or maybe it's just a me thing. I don't know.
No, it's just you, Scott. Yeah, that's only it. You, man. No, that's nobody else has ever done that. That's only you. No, I mean, it's kind of this idea of like the Google Translate is like, you said this, this is what it means to me. And so I think when we can get on the same page about that, we reduce a lot of conflict and assumption, right? Because then we know. And so if I can say to you, hey, when you said that, this is what I hear, you can correct me. You can say, that's not actually what I was going for. I meant this. But I think a lot of times couples skip over that and then they just react to what they heard, not what was said.
And maybe I guess that you get sort of on autopilot when you're with somebody after the first couple months, and then you end up kind of overseeing that. When just bringing that up, maybe that would stop the whole process of whatever that person's doing, or at least make them think about it before they say it in a way.
Yeah, because I think the thing is if we're with someone and we feel like it's a good fit and they're healthy and they're good for us, I think it's okay to give them the benefit of the doubt. So what I would tell couples is, if you're with this person and we're giving them the benefit of the doubt, then we're going to assume they're not trying to hurt your feelings, right? Because that's kind of a weird thing to do. Like if I'm talking to you now and, you know, you're like, screw you, Jason, like that'd be kind of a weird thing to say at this point, right? And so what I would tell you is like, if I heard you say that to me, I think I'd say like, hey man, why'd you say that? But what we do in relationships is we act like that's how it was. Right? We don't stop and ask if that's what happened. We're just certain that's what happened. And so what I try to help people do is just say like, let's slow down and give them the benefit of the doubt. Do you think they really tried to do that? Like, why don't you ask them? And if they did, then we can have a fight. Like, then we're on the same page. Let's totally have a fight. If they didn't, let's clarify.
Gotcha. And you said something interesting. I want to ask, with that person is good for you. How do you know the person is good for you?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think like you're both pointed in the same direction, right? I think maybe you're not perfect because nobody is, but you both want to be better. Maybe you have boundaries and you both kind of are honest and upfront about that. You have similar rhythms in your life. You have values that are similar. So I think good for you. I mean, that's a really general term. But I think at the same time, like we know if we're headed in the right direction.
And when it feels right, I mean, I know we got into feelings, yeah. Feelings could be a little scary, but when it feels, you know, because for me, it's always a balance. Like, is this person pushing me enough in a way, or at least not challenging me, just helping me grow in a certain way? Because I do feel like with in some of my relationships, it's almost like they just become absorbed to me and what I want to do. I'm like, I don't want to do just what I want to do. I want to do what you want to do. And I want to make you happy. And I want to know who you are. And I feel like that part for me always is something that gets kind of lost in translation in a way.
Yeah. We got to make space for it. Right. And so I think like sometimes we don't do that. And then that becomes its own problem. But I mean, I think to me, one of the marks of a couple that is going in the right direction is they can do difficult emotions of conflict. So to me, if you're in a relationship and you say like, hey, it's an amazing relationship, but we cannot do conflict, I'm going to kind of second guess that and say, is it really that great? Like, how is it really going if we can't resolve problems that come up?
Very, very interesting. And I saw you post on one of your Instagram, maybe it was a couple of weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago. It was just like a couple questions that you had for like deep self-reflection. I don't know if you remember it, but is that something you do in the morning? And what would those questions be to really start your day right or even end the day right? And what does that look like for you?
Yeah. So I think for me, I mean, it changes a little bit. I'm kind of a guy that likes to switch things up and see what's working, what's not. But I think generally speaking, I want to know what am I doing well? What do I feel like I'd do differently if I could? I also want to know like what direction am I going? And is what I'm saying is important? Am I reflecting that with my time? Right. So if I say to you, well, mental health is really important, and you say, okay, cool. Like, when's the last time you meditated or talked to a therapist? And I'm like, oh, I never have. I'm living a life that's not really congruent to what I'm telling myself. And so my big challenge is, am I living in a way that's congruent with what I'm saying is important? And if I'm not, then I either need to change my behavior or change my rules. And both are okay, but I need to be really intentional about that because otherwise I think that's where big problems come in.
Because you're living an incongruent life, basically.
Yeah. And then we struggle to reconcile that, right? Mm-hmm. That's why it doesn't feel right. It's because we feel like we're in two different places at once.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Man, Jason, thank you so much for joining me. You're very insightful. I could, you know, my mother would love you, man. just thank you so much.
I think I'd like your mother. I think your mother could teach me a lot by the sounds of it. So yeah, that would be great.
Yin and yang. There's, you know, you guys, you guys got wisdom, but you know, she tries, but,
she's your mom. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But dude, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it. You can find all Jason's information below, all the contact information. If you guys need a connection, please, I'll connect you to Jason, whatever. And we'll connect the Instagram down below too, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, this has been a great opportunity. Thanks for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much. If you're watching on YouTube, like it, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. But as always, stay safe, stay positive, stay blessed. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.